2.03, always a good place to start. In my paper that I prepared for you all, I list a whole long laundry list of defenses and other types of issues that come up for trial defense counsel when preparing for the case. Of course, in 30 minutes, no need to go through all those defensive instructions, be them affirmative defenses or regular defenses, but I kind of want to focus on, for instance, self-defense today and kind of give you an idea because, you know, that's not the easiest thing in the world for a defense attorney to stand in front of a jury panel and explain what self-defense is. You get fired these questions and whatnot from the panel. What are some things to think about when you're doing these types of defenses and self-defense? One thing that's imperative under 2.03, if you have a defense, did the judge in the jury instructions, they're required to, if they give the defense, they're required to tell the jury, hey, if you have a reasonable doubt as to whether or not self-defense applied or necessity, you must acquit the citizen accused. You must acquit. Is that in the jury instruction? Sometimes it's not, and it's pretty telling if it's not. If it's not in the jury instruction, how do you preserve error to that, and how does appellate counsel look to see if error was preserved under that type of situation? Affirmative defenses under 2.04 of the Penal Code. So they say, you know it's an affirmative defense under any of the laws in the state of Texas if it begins by saying it's an affirmative defense that. That's the kind of test I like. Is this an affirmative defense? Well, it says it's an affirmative defense if. So that's kind of a nice deal to know. Now, there's a lot of affirmative defenses, too, and I listed those in my paper also. So you all can see what affirmative defenses there are and what needs to be proven up in order to get those. So in other words, was trial defense counsel aware when they were doing trial that it's a confess and avoid type offense? And if they're aware of that, did they confess in order to avoid responsibility? Or if it's an affirmative defense, be it insanity, for instance, or a mistake of law, one, did they give notice on insanity? If they did give notice and they tried to preserve that correctly, did they prove up that affirmative defense by a preponderance? If they did and the judge refuses to give the instruction, what's the effect of that? In other words, if trial defense counsel says, look, judge, I have proven up self-defense, or for the affirmative defense, I've proven up insanity. Well, the judge says, you know, show me in the record, counsel, or cite me what you heard. Obviously, you don't have the physical record yet, but tell me what you heard, what evidence was provided, where you think you've proven up by a preponderance your defense of insanity. Was trial defense counsel ready to do that? And if they were, the paper that I wrote for y'all leads you down the steps that you have to look at for, as appellate counsel or habeas counsel to see if it was properly preserved. If not, are there any implications that you can use under Almanza? Does Almanza apply, which we'll talk about in a little bit? If Almanza does not apply, then is there a procedural default that could apply also? So how prepared was trial defense counsel to address those particular issues? If they were not, there's a good incentive to still raise it on direct appeal and try to raise it under Almanza and let the appellate courts write how trial defense counsel screwed that up. Now you've kind of got a little bit of a litmus test to look at for your habeas to try to put it in the habeas down the road. Our thought is that if trial defense counsel either didn't get the instruction they wanted, or if they did get the instruction they wanted, the instruction is not proper, how well did trial defense counsel try to fix that? And that could lead you to a very good place to look at in their file as the habeas counsel to see what effort they put towards investigating the particular defense they were looking at, how much they had prepared in order to get it properly before the judge and to preserve error on it. So I had been practicing about 5 years, I'll admit it, and I had done about 30 jury trials at that point. And I went into court and I was talking to the judge about the abstract jury instruction. And there was a young prosecutor in the court with me, And I said, Judge, I'm concerned about the abstract portion of the jury charge. And the prosecutor said, what's that? Because, you know, it's not surprising that some people don't know what the jury instruction is all about. The fact that, you know, there's an abstract portion of the jury charge and there's the application paragraph of the jury charge.